Welcome to the Get Over Yourself podcast. This is author and athlete Brad Kearns discovering ways to be healthy, fit, and happy in hectic, high-stress modern life. So let's slow down and take a deep breath, take a cold plunge, and expertly balance that competitive intensity with an appreciation of the journey. That's the theme of the show. Here we go. Doing a lot of low intensity general everyday movement. So that's what our genes expect, and that what promotes optimal human health. Meanwhile, we have so many modern day fitness enthusiasts performing right in that black hole, that no man's land, where they're going pretty hard, or Dave Scott, triathlon legend on my podcast with him, called it, quote, kinda hard. Welcome to Manchester. We're so happy to have the triathletes from around the world gather here for the World Championships in the year 1993. And so, I do have a bit of Manchester accent that I can throw down. Is that whole deal emphatic enough for you? Yeah, sorry, no little sneaky sneakies, no cheaty cheaties in there. All right. This is Brad. I want to tell you about my life-changing acquisition of a personal home-use sauna. I have a 6x6 barrel sauna in my backyard, ready-made heat therapy, a fabulous unit from almost heaven. Check out their website. You can very affordably order your own sauna for installation in your backyard or garage and have a sauna experience, the fabulous health benefits accruing from exposure to hot temperatures. Get that sweat going. These are beautiful traditional dry barrel saunas where you splash the water on the rocks, go in there and relax. It's become a social centerpiece at my home. People traveling from far and wide to come check out the barrel sauna, turn the dial or set the timer and walk in to 200 degrees in the Caribbean seas. For some reason, people like to come to the sauna more than my cold tub. Go figure. Check out almostheaven.com and their beautiful natural wood designs, and pretty soon, surprisingly affordable, you will be in the home sauna business. Hi, listeners. It's time for another Breather Q&A show. Womp, womp, womp. Womp, womp, womp. Womp, womp, womp. Womp, womp, womp. Some interesting questions. Let's jump right into it. People trying their best to live healthy, do the right thing. Justin writes in, I love your content. I listen to Primal Endurance on audiobook. Thanks for your personality. Oh, yes. If you're listening to a 13-hour audiobook, you gotta have some outtakes, man. You gotta have some fresh value added for the audio version versus the written version. Stuff you can't do on a page. Let me put it that way. So go listen to any of my audio recordings, including Keto Reset Diet and Keto for Life, where I got into the fancy pantsy Penguin Random House studios to knock that thing out with my own audio engineer looking through the window, making funny gestures at me, especially when I went off script. And I have a tendency to do that. I just start yapping on a little value added insight, and the guy's trying to follow me word for word as per the protocol when you're recording a audiobook the fancy way, and he's shaking his head going, what the heck is going on? And then he got used to it. So we were in a good groove. Listen to those two books as well as all the Primal books on Audible. I know, I'm a big fan right now. I should do a commercial, huh? I know they have commercials on podcasts, but Audible's a great way to keep up with your reading when your eyes get too tired at night, like me, because I'm looking at a screen all day. But punching up those audiobooks, lots of fun. Not every time when I'm out exercising, because I like to explore and listen to nature too, but I will crank through some of those books going at 1.75 speed or 2.0 speed, and that way I can listen to a book in half the time it says, because I'm listening to all the insights and not losing much, unless it's a really complex, complicated book that I have to slow down to 1.5, 1.25, or even 1.0. Anyway, Justin continues. He says, I don't feel I've learned enough about accidentally going a few beats over your maximum aerobic heart rate here and there during a training session. I know that this has been addressed, but not in depth based on the content I come across. Maybe you have a podcast and I missed out. Please let me know. He's a mountain biker, a skate skier, and on both those activities, it's very easy to blow past your training heart rate, in his case, 140. So the huge importance here, I've done entire shows on this over on the Primal Endurance podcast channel, but the essence of it is that when you're conducting an aerobic training session, when you're teaching your body to burn fat and build your cardiovascular endurance, you want to limit your effort to 180 minus your age in beats per minute as your training heart rate. And what that number indicates is your maximum aerobic heart rate, the point where you're burning maximum fat calories per minute, maximum fat oxidation per minute, with a minimal amount of anaerobic stimulation, a minimal amount of glucose burning. And as you drift over that maximum aerobic number, what happens is you start to burn less fat and an increasing percentage of glucose. Obviously, the faster you go, the greater percentage of glucose that you have to burn to fuel your muscles, fuel your energy systems with a quicker burning fuel than fat, which requires the mitochondria, uses oxygen. And so it's appropriate for when we're at rest, we're burning mostly fat, and when we're exercising comfortably. And if you dip over that number, the metabolic effects of the workout are altered. And so when you're doing a proper fat burning session, it's very important to keep your heart rate in that fat burning zone for the duration of the session, and also to warm up very carefully and gradually. What happens if you tap into glucose burning is you kind of get stuck there in a sense. In other words, if you start to bring glucose into the picture, your body has a difficult time recalibrating back to exclusively fat burning. So if you're going in a workout and, oh, it's just one hill, I only went up for a couple minutes of higher heart rate, that will ruin or compromise the metabolic effects of the workout, and you'll kick out of exclusive fat burning into that combination. And some of the scientists call it the black hole. In other words, a training intensity that is too difficult to be classified as a true fat burning session, but not really challenging enough to be considered a breakthrough session, a high intensity explosive session where you're working on those attributes of peak performance when you're sprinting or doing a proper interval session. So the point is to take it easy. You should be able to breathe comfortably, carry on a conversation without getting out of breath, and monitoring that heart rate very carefully with a wireless heart rate monitor. No matter what level of activity, what level of commitment you have to fitness, even for novices, it's extremely important. So if you're listening going, why is he talking about all this jock stuff with these super athletes? I just go to the gym and do my Stairmaster and watch the news on CNN. You're having a big, huge difference, kind of a split in the road, whether it's an effective fat burning session or whether it's a slightly too strenuous combo fat burning, sugar burning session. And when you have concurrent goals of burning body fat better, maybe dropping excess body fat, becoming more fat adapted through dietary strategies, you want those workouts to complement your dietary efforts. So the fat burning session kind of turbocharges fat metabolism for hours and hours after the workout. The metabolic effects of workout have been seen to last for up to 72 hours. That's from Dr. Phil Maffetone. So if you're doing a good fat burning session and then you're eating appropriately, getting rid of the processed carbs, the high insulin stimulating foods, eating those nutritious meals high in natural nutritious fats, then you can trend in that direction of becoming a fat burning beast easily and effortlessly, dropping excess body fat, and all is well, unless you go a little bit too hard, or like Justin mentioned, speaking for so many athletes, including myself, Justin, I know it's tough because the pace is so comfortable and so easy to exceed that number, that beep, 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 180 minus your age, that it's hard to stay focused. And that's why the wireless heart rate monitor becomes so important. You have to have that feedback. You have to have that beeper alarm set that will regulate you when you're out there on the road, especially with things like cardiac drift or the accumulative fatigue of a workout. And what that means is even if you're running the same speed, let's say you're running your comfortable 9 minute miles or whatever, and you're at mile 2, mile 3, mile 4, pretty soon this phenomenon called cardiac drift occurs where even though you're running the same speed and feel the same exertion, your heart rate drifts higher a bit due to the accumulation of fatigue from the run, even if you're not talking about a major effort. So even when you're running along comfortably, the idea is to respect that heart rate limit such that you slow down in the latter stages of your workout, and you do this routinely. I know it goes against your competitive instincts and the fitness ethos to no pain, no gain, or to suffer through it and keep your pace for the whole workout and congratulate yourself at the end with a Jamba Juice. And yeah, you know why you want that Jamba Juice, that quick hit of sugar? It's because you exceeded your maximum aerobic heart rate and made it something different than the intended benefit of a fat-burning session. So yeah, I'll give an emphatic recommendation to be extremely disciplined with regulating that heart rate and making sure that it doesn't exceed, even for brief periods, the maximum aerobic heart rate. A lot of cyclists will come back at me. They'd be coming back at me saying, Brad, you don't understand. These hills are so tough. The heart has to beep just to get up to the top of the hill without falling over. And to that I say, mate, go into the bike shop and get yourself a bigger gear, you know, more teeth, a larger chain ring in the back, not chain ring, larger sprocket. What do they call it? Freewheel. Sorry, bikers. I've been out of it for a while. The chain rings in the front and the freewheels in the back of a bicycle. So you want more teeth on your easiest freewheel gear in the back. And what happens then is that, especially on a mountain bike, you can go 1.5 miles an hour without falling over. You'll just be pedaling kind of at a significant rate and going nowhere because the gear is so easy. But that's the point. You just kind of make your way gradually, steadily up the hill without exerting yourself, without straining yourself, and then preserving the intended benefits of the workout. Is that whole deal emphatic enough for you? Yeah, sorry, no little sneaky sneakies, no cheaty cheaties in there. All right, Lee writing in from Manchester, England, United Kingdom. He wants me to keep up my impersonations and accents. Can you believe people egging me on with this stuff? And I would be bowled over if one of your shows, you could try a UK Manchester accent, as this is where I'm from. And I remember spending a little time in Manchester, and they called it Manchester. Manchester. Welcome to Manchester. We're so happy to have the triathletes from around the world gather here for the World Championships in the year 1993. And so I do have a bit of Manchester accent that I can throw down to please Lee and who knows how many others. Countless others listening, looking for something unique, interesting, and off the wall when they're consuming podcast content. You've come to the right place. Get over yourself, Brad. Okay, here we are. I am. I'm trying. And Lee also says that he's a longtime devotee of Mark and my work, the Primal Blueprint, the Primal Endurance. We're combining the science and the practicality of keto, very much appreciated, especially the math strategies, maximum aerobic function, which I just talked about at length on the first question. And then he says, hey, you know, try the accent. And also good job to Manchester City, one of the greatest upsets in the history of sports. For those of you not aware of English Premier League and the long odds of the lads from Manchester City, it was just an extraordinary thing. It was a few years ago now, but it was still keen in the memory of all the citizens of Manchester. Okay. Now, here comes a 61-year-old orthopedic trauma surgeon, a badass from Colorado. He likes hockey, speed skating in his background, and now he likes to Nordic ski as a low-key masters racer. So they go 10 to 25 kilometers. Also skiing with his kids, who are quite good. I'm not going to stop that. I love being fit outdoors and at high altitude. I've adopted the Maffetone or the Kearns approach, subscribed to the websites, buying into all that stuff, and I train pretty polarized. That's a compliment, right? If you've not heard that term, people, polarized means you're either going really easy, Like I described for an aerobic session, or you're going really hard and explosive, and that's the message of the primal blueprint, the ancestral living, the ancestral fitness patterns of either sprinting for your life, lifting heavy rocks, building shelter, or walking around, gathering, and doing a lot of low intensity general everyday movement. So that's what our genes expect, and that's what promotes optimal human health. Meanwhile, we have so many modern day fitness enthusiast performing right in that black hole, that no man's land, where they're going pretty hard, or Dave Scott, triathlon legend on my podcast with him, called it, quote, kinda hard. And kinda hard is a bad deal because it promotes chronic overproduction of the stress hormones to do these kinda hard workouts day after day or several days a week. The CrossFit community, I love you all. Peace out. But you guys are extremely guilty, as a blanket statement, of going into that gym too frequently, too many days a week, and doing stuff that's kinda hard and definitely kinda too long in duration. A 10 or 12 or 15 minute kinda hard session is great stuff. That's micro workouts. That's a huge explosion in the fitness scene, a wonderful transformation of dated and flawed training topics, where we have these micro workouts where we can throw in throughout the day mini bursts of explosive effort that promote fitness. They don't tire you out. They break up long periods of stillness when you're sitting at your desk all day. Wonderful strategy, because a 1 minute effort on the pull-up bar, or when I'm throwing the garbage away and pass by my hexagonal deadlift bar and do one set, maybe two, that stuff ain't gonna tire me out. It's not gonna fry me. But if you add it up over 365 days time, oh my gosh, a phenomenal difference from doing nothing but sitting on your butt all day and then going to the gym and doing a proper hour-long workout. Even if you go to the gym every day and pound for an hour, that's 7 days a week, 7 hours a week. How many total hours in a week? 168. So all that downtime, that stillness, that sedentary time is going to compromise your health, even if you are devoted to do the hard stuff for an hour every single day. It's arguably much better to engage in these micro workouts, do more frequent everyday movement, and not prioritize so much these extremely stressful trips to the gym. So again, back to the question, the polarized training, I was just defining that for you. So he either does low intensity cardio, or he does sprints and sports specific intervals. Okay, here's the deal. This is of interest to many, many people. So here's a guy who's very athletic, enthusiastic, training correctly in that polarized manner where he's keeping it low intensity or he's hitting it hard. Whenever I try the low carb approach, I feel poorly. I've tried on and off for 8 years. The results are clearly negative. As an MD and research scientist, I have a tough time accepting some of the claims made for low-carb sports training. The literature and data that is quoted is not especially strong. My question is, as a coach and resource for endurance athletes, do you actually know any competitive Nordic skiers who have benefited from a low-carb diet? And have you found that some athletes do better with non-processed food, higher-carb diet than others? All right, Wade Smith, nice, nice question. And boy, you put the pressure on me, right? Whatever I say, people are counting on. As a coach and resource for endurance athletes, let's hear the answer. I think you've discovered the individualized approach is trumping anything that you're going to get from book, a yapper on a podcast, an expert, or even watching what the world-class athletes are doing. So you've tried on and off for 8 years and have a negative approach, negative result from cutting those carbs back. That's gotta stand for more than a bookshelf full of books, right? Now, we're gonna unwind this a little further. And the first thing that comes to mind is the polarized approach. Is that being executed correctly? Because you're talking about being at high altitude. You're talking about skiing with your kids who are good athletes. And you're talking about racing as a master. So there's no such thing as a low-key master's racer, because if you're on the starting line, that's pretty high-key. And you're also a high-performing individual orthopedic trauma surgeon. So you're not a couch potato, right? And so there is that question, is this being executed correctly at the proper heart rates, or because it's so easy at altitude doing the extremely difficult sport of Nordic skiing, it's so easy to routinely exceed that maximum aerobic heart rate to the extent that you are conducting carbohydrate burning workouts or glucose burning dominant workouts over and over again for hours and hours a week, which come with a requisite need to consume a lot of dietary carbohydrates and extremely difficult to sustain on a low carbohydrate diet. So I'm just going to throw that out there as a challenge. And if the individual is nodding his head saying, oh yeah, I am definitely watching my heart rate and I'm going really slow, that's great. But for most of us and for all the listeners to reflect upon is that you're doing a good job conducting these fat burning workouts rather than drifting into glucose burning. So there's a huge difference there. And if you're doing a lot of glucose burning workouts and consuming a lot of carbs, then you stand to gain from slowing down the pace of your workouts. This is the essence of the entire primal endurance approach, the book, the digital course, all that stuff, is that slowing down will help you go faster, be healthier, and then have more success, especially with removing the refined carbohydrates that have no place in anyone's diet. The nutrient-deficient refined carbohydrates, the gels, the bars, the drinks, slamming down sugar in the name of athletic performance. So when we're talking about what amount of carbs are going to work for you, we will assume that any carbs that you're consuming are colorful, nutrient-dense carbs that bring you more value than just throwing sugar into your body. Remember that most carbohydrates, when you consume them, they're pretty quickly converted into glucose. So for the purposes of optimizing daily carbohydrate intake levels, average carbohydrate intake levels, putting the nutritional benefits or consequences aside for a moment, most carbs are, a carb is a carb in this sense, if you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so we're trying to optimize your carb intake, knowing that they're going to be all nutritious carbs, and especially for an athlete, the idea of consuming a nutrient-deficient inflammatory carb like a sugar product is not going to pay off in any way. Of course, you're going to have less penalty if you're sucking down something right after a workout. So there's a little bit of a free pass, as Dr. Kate Shanahan says, when the glycogen suitcases are opened, any carbs will go right in there and refill glycogen, even sugar. So beyond that, we want to look for nutritional benefits with our carbs. And there are, you know, a good number of high-performing endurance and ultra-endurance athletes performing very well on low carbohydrate diet. I think Zach Bitter is one of the guys that you mentioned we hear a lot about. He's got his podcast with carnivore expert Dr. Sean Baker. It's called Human Performance Outliers. And this is a guy who set the American record for a 100-mile run on a running track, running in an 11 hours and 45 minutes, an extremely impressive ultra-endurance performance. And he's largely fueled in his everyday diet by a carnivore-ish pattern with minimal carbohydrate intake. When he's competing, he's throwing in more carbs because he's competing at a high level and running pretty fast, and so needs some stuff to fuel that furnace while he's moving along at 6-minute mile pace all day long or whatever. Timothy Olsen is a guy who won the Western States 100-mile run back-to-back, and he is also noted for eating in a paleo-style pattern where he's, you know, cutting out almost all the refined carbs and more of a low-carbohydrate, high-fat pattern. So yeah, people are succeeding at different levels. A lot of recreational enthusiasts have written in and, you know, connected with the Maffetone community, the Primal Endurance community. So people are doing well, especially when they remove those refined carbohydrates. But beyond that, you know, personal experience, seeing what works for you. And one amazing breakthrough insight that I've come up with recently for myself that will change the world when I can communicate it and you can share this clip with others is, guess what? Go buy your freaking appetite. It's as simple as that. And it's been a wonderful revelation for me when you're trying to optimize carbohydrate intake and you're sitting around twiddling your thumbs and you're thinking of having a sweet potato. That is a profound insight from deep in your body's wisdom that maybe you're, maybe it's a good day to increase your carbohydrate intake. This also occurs with me on the subject of popcorn. So I will have a strong desire for a big bowl of popcorn in conjunction with performing some impressive workouts, whether high intensity or long duration endurance workouts. And that just is going with the flow, baby. And I think it really is something that's important to respect and prioritize up there high on the top five list of decision-making parameters for optimizing carbohydrate intake. So how does that sound? And on days when I'm not that active, I have little to no need for carbs or even food. I can easily fast until 2 or 3 or 4 p.m., making for a 20-hour fast. If I want to brag about it or post on social media, I can do a 24-hour fast. But I don't really feel like pairing a 24-hour fast with a high-intensity difficult high jump training session in the morning. In fact, I might even come home and throw a bunch of stuff into a smoothie to help accelerate my recovery right away, including a measurable amount of carbohydrates. So that going with the flow and being a little bit more intuitive, I think, is really going to be the key in the future to unwind and sort through all this faction building and this controversy and this deep dive into the internet where you're hearing different things from different people and becoming confused. But finally, as I close the show, as well as the answer to this great question, we also have to put into the mix the question of the day is, are you carrying excess body fat or not? So if you're an athletic person who's performing, who's competing, who's keeping up with your kids on those workouts on the Nordic skis, and you don't have any excess body fat, you have a whole different set of decision-making parameters from someone who is struggling and frustrated that they have an extra 5 or 8 or 10 or 20 pounds packed on there, despite devoted efforts to dietary restriction and to performing the requisite workouts, keeping active, and doing everything they can do to try to drop that excess body fat. So if you're still carrying excess body fat, especially as a fitness enthusiast, as an athlete, the most direct path to getting that off you is to minimize dietary insulin production. It's really as simple as that. Just finished a great book by Dr. Jason Fung called The Obesity Code, one of the world's leading experts on using diet to cure the problem of obesity and type 2 diabetes. And he cites extensive research and makes a really clear case for the idea that it's not about caloric intake nor caloric expenditure, but it's simply about the level of insulin you produce in your diet. And the way to lower your average insulin production is through fasting and getting good at extended fasts. And then, of course, through eliminating the refined carbohydrates that spike insulin, and then consuming overall lower amounts of dietary carbohydrates if you're interested in reducing excess body fat. And if you're not, then you're trying to transition over into the athletic path where you're going to find out what works best for you for performance and recovery. So that's where we have a little bit of a distinction. And it's important to recognize that where we're starting, our starting point. All right. Oh, boy. What a wonderful, quick-moving, fast-moving show of only a few questions, but great points for everyone to reflect upon. Keep them coming. Send your emails to getoveryourselfpodcast@gmail.com. I know you only have to type it once, but you can do it. Type it out. Send us an email. We answer all of them. We appreciate them so much. Even if you're pitching me on something and found that email address somehow. Anyway. Love to hear from you, and also love your support in spreading the information about this show to other people that you think might benefit from. And I'm using this great app called Overcast to listen to my podcasts. I think it's superior to the Apple platform, which where most people consume their podcasts, because I can make playlists and sort through the shows really easily. You can also choose your speed from 1.0 all the way up to 2+, and you can put little gradients. So I'm going 1.7, 1.8, 1.5, 1.6, whatever I want, man. And the coolest thing is that on one button you can push and create a clip of what you're listening to at the time, and you can stretch the sound bar so you can customize your clip to make it a minute long or 2 minutes long, and then take that clip and in another push of a button, text it to a friend and say, listen to this guy yapping. Does he know what he's talking about or not? And that is a lot of fun and a great way to expose the show to others. So if you want to check out a new podcast app called Overcast, maybe some of the other apps do the same, but I love sharing clips and short bits of information that will draw people in to hopefully listen to, let's say, the whole show. Yeah, and that is the whole show. Yo, thank you. Bye. Thank you for listening to the show. We would love your feedback at getoveryourselfpodcast@gmail.com. And we would also love if you could leave a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a hassle. You have to go to desktop iTunes, click on the tab that says ratings and reviews, and then click to rate the show anywhere from 5 to 5 stars. And it really helps spread the word so more people can find the show and get over themselves, because they need to. Thanks for doing it.